What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Clocks Running, the podcast for everything flag football officials. I'm your host, Ant, and it is our 20th episode, and we have an exciting one planned tonight. So without further ado, let's just get right into it. I want to bring in an official all the way on the other side of the United States, and he is one of the only officials I know that has 7 different Facebook profiles. So here we go. What up, Joe?
Hey, my guy.
Oh man. What up, man? Any plans to create some more social media profiles in the near future?
Or? I might change personality in another couple months. So yeah, man.
All right, cool. All right. Before we get into the topics tonight, I just want to, I see your shirt, man. I just want to get into it a little bit. I know the announcements came over social media about the men's and the women's national teams. You spent this last weekend there live, seeing them cut it from 18 to 12. So tell me all about it, man. All your experiences. Let me hear it.
Man, it was a wonderful experience. I got a chance to meet some of the coolest coaches, the players. I felt like it was a lot of great talent, a lot of great athletes. That's the biggest part, cutting it from the 18 to 12, because I know everyone deserves an opportunity. But being in that predicament where you got to cut them down from the 18 to 12, congratulations to everyone who did make the team. They played their heart out for the past couple months trying to get themselves prepared to make the team. So, like I say, it was a wonderful experience to get a chance to meet a lot of different refs. Network with them, talk with them, see their style and things in the nature. But it was a one opportunity. It was a great opportunity.
Yes, sir. So I know that this team is the one that's going to go to Finland for the IFAB World Championship. You know, they built a women's, a men's, U15, U17, both boys and girls. I had the opportunity last summer. I know you were there as well to be a part of the IFAB and the Junior International Cup. And it was a clean sweep for the Americans. Of course, the women's championship, the men's championship, they were both pretty close with Mexico. And then I think the junior ones were all U.S. against Japan, I think, if I remember right. Yeah, yeah. So I know since then there's been the European championship. There was the Asian championship. And so now they're all coming together in the Finland World Championship. I think it's something like 60 teams, 60 countries are going to be represented there. So this is a huge opportunity. Yeah, go ahead.
I was gonna say, I don't know the exactly count of how many, but it's going to be tough all around. You know, once they get the scheme of how people play and start to play against them year after year, they start to get a different concept. And it's going to be some good game. Pretty good game.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure, and I know that the clock for a flag football player is a lot longer than, you know, a football player in the NFL or, you know, that's played in arena ball or other professional avenues. But this is 2024, and the Olympics aren't until 2028. So I did notice with the national team selections that there was a lot more youth selected this time around than in previous years. So I know you kind of mentioned before the show, you were dodging a little bit. You were saying you don't remember names, but in your opinion, were there people that were maybe ousted because of the future that they're looking towards the Olympics already? Or what do you think happened?
I think so. It's a lot of guys. I mean, the age range, you know, I feel like it goes up. Like I said, I don't know everyone and all their ages and things, but at the same time, I feel like they're preparing themselves. You know what I mean? That's the best thing to play chess and not checkers. So you got to prepare yourself for the next coming to know you're going to have the same type of player. They know each other and things, but I think they could have had a lot to play with it. The fact that the age and the fact that the next Olympics are not to the 2028. So there could be a lot big factor in that.
Yes, sir. So something that I observed, you know, it's not something that I am a United States citizen, you know, something that I'm not proud to talk about, but I think it's important to talk about. Last year, I was overtaken by the difference of a lot more respect for the game and a lot more sportsmanship and camaraderie that came from the international team compared to the United States. So it's something that I saw a lot of, were a lot of unsportsmanlike calls against the United States, both in the men's and women's, and it kind of seeped into the youth games as well. There were coaches that were getting, sideline warnings and almost thrown out of the game, comparatively to some of the teams from Brazil and Argentina and Panama, Mexico, that just seem to have a lot more sportsmanship, invested in them, and they just handled the game a little bit different. Joe, did you notice that over the last few times when you've been involved in this?
I can't say that, and I think a lot of things got to deal with, we don't know their language. So at the same time, they can be saying the same things that United States players are saying.
I got you.
They're saying in a way that you're not going to be able to be reciprocal of it because you don't know what they're saying. A lot of times, the way they communicate, if you learn their language, they think you know what play calls they call out. So, but in the same time, the things that we do understand is, my bad, I'm sorry, and things in the nature. So they're more apologetic. They're not fussing at you directly. They're not going after you as much. And I do agree with that. Even if going down to the youth, they have to, sometimes the coaches got to remind them, we're not going to have that. We're not going to, don't talk to the refs. Don't even make anything like that to the refs, because you never know how they're going to perceive what you said. I seen an NBA game the other day, one of the guys just got upset about a call. He didn't even do anything, and they called the tech, but you don't say nothing to me at all. My call is my call. Respect it. And if you don't, you say anything to me, or you look at me funny, or whatever, all that right there is not tolerated. So in saying that, you got to sometimes prepare your players to let them know, don't talk to the ref, don't argue with the ref, that's their call. And you just keep moving on and play your game. And that's how it should be. Just play your game.
Yeah. So, and I know, people like to say that there isn't, that home field advantage. There's always going to be somewhat a home field advantage where you're playing at home. You got the fans, you got the excitement, adrenaline's running, all of those things. The IFAF Americas last year was in Charlotte. The World Games was in Birmingham, Alabama. So recently, America has had that opportunity. I know as far as the officials that they pick, the host country does have a few more officials than the rest of the countries. So now what's going to happen is in August, it's going to be in Finland. And I know America will have some officials that represent the United States and go with the team. But ultimately, I think that there is one thing that all officials all across the world probably understand, and that's disrespect towards them. There's certain curse words that it doesn't matter what language is spoken. you understand what's being said, And so I do hope that the United States took to heart some of the conversations that were had. I know after a U.S.-Mexico pool play game last summer, the head of the United States committee, he brought the men's team in and he had a huge speech with all of them and said, this is not what we're doing. This is not how we are representing this country. This exactly. needs to change. And if you don't like it, you won't be on this team moving forward. And I will say that I think that the team, the men's team specifically, it looks a lot different than it did last year. And there were definitely a lot of names that weren't on even the selection of 18. So I can only speculate. I don't know if that had something to do with it, but I know that there was a very, very stern talking to from that, that representative of the Olympic and United States International Committee, that he said, this is not how we are going to represent ourselves. So hopefully that continues to just be talked about. I want the United States to represent itself very well, but do it with, do it with class, do it with sportsmanship. I know that recently we've had the opportunity to have officials come over from Mexico, from Canada, from the Cayman Islands. We have Dean come over, and I just want to continue to just implore the flag football players of this country to just treat them, you know, with respect, treat them as if you're bringing them into your home, you know, as a host, because it's a huge opportunity for all of us, because some of these officials that are coming from other countries, just like Jacob said last week, they will probably be the ones that represent their country in the Olympics, which means that as a rec flag football player, you have the opportunity to be able to have an Olympic official officiate your game. And so, you know, that should not be, you know, that shouldn't be taken lightly. So maybe, you know, just because there's a language barrier, or maybe you think that they don't understand the rules, understand that these officials that come from other countries, they are sacrificing a lot to be able to have the opportunity, and they study that rule book. And I've definitely, you know, something you mentioned before the show about the mechanics and how important the mechanics were this past weekend. Well, that is something that is hammered into the international officials. And they teach me so much, because ultimately there is that language barrier. But you know what? What everybody knows is this is a hold. Oh. You know, this is PI. That's how we eliminate that language barrier, especially between officials. And man, I can tell you this. I don't know if you feel the same way, but being under that pressure at the IFAF Continentals last year, I felt after those 5 days that my brain was complete mush. I felt like I was concentrating so much. Every time I threw a flag, I wanted to make sure it was the right call. You know what I mean? Did you have the same experience?
You have that pressure is on you. You know, you got cameras watching you and everything. You know, everything that you do is being recorded to be able to see, so you can learn from your mistakes as well. You know, so you can be able to get better. But when you're in that spotlight, you know, we all going to make mistakes. That's no one is perfect. But, you know, when you study them, you got to know your material. You got to know your mechanics and know what to do and where to be at all times. You know, when you get selected to be that official, then, hey, it's time for you to use everything that you learn from the different reps, the different, you know, your different teammates and everything, and put up for your country. You know, and like I know the reps that came from Mexico, reps that came from Panama, everywhere around, they study their craft so they can be able to represent their country to say, hey, these reps did a good job. You know, and they know exactly what they're doing. And that's the end of the day, what you got to know. And it's like, I had a couple guys that talked to me that was from Mexico, and just having a conversation with them and be able to talk with them to help them out, and they can help me out. It's all about helping each other. It's not about one putting one down. It's more about helping each other out so we can all be better, to be a better official and better players, as you were saying.
Yeah, absolutely. And ultimately, with the international, any of these international tournaments that happen, IFAF, World Games, any of these big events that happen, there is a very strict handbook on how this official's mechanics need to look. And so I know I did not come from tackle. I don't have that experience. And so really my experience on mechanics was just what I was able to read out of that rule book. But I know that there were officials that were working with me that had a lot of tackle experience, and maybe they were explaining things differently. That then when I got my video back explaining to me, yeah, actually this mechanic was wrong. And I think to myself, okay, yeah, it said this way in the handbook, but you know, we're all coming with different experiences, different training, all this stuff, where with internationally, they want everybody on the same page, because ultimately when it comes down to it, that gold medal game is not going to just be one country. And it's probably going to be multiple languages represented. And, you know, and that's amazing. It's, you know, it's inclusive, and it's a beautiful thing to be able to have the whole world represented like that. I mean, we are on the cusp of seeing history when it comes into the Olympics. And so, yeah, as officials, I hope that we continue to work together. I hope that more officials from other countries come and be a part of USA flag tournaments. And so, you know, that we can continue to, you know, build those relationships and work together. And you know, it's exciting stuff, man. Anything else you want to add about the trial?
Man, other than that, man, it was, like I said, it was a great weekend. If you haven't got a chance to do it, I feel like every official need to get a chance to see what it's about, to see how the referee and non-contact game and to be able to, you know, you get the exposure and you get to meet different refs and things. I feel like everyone should get a chance to be able to get their feet wet a little bit. But other than that, good experience, man.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I would definitely say that I can respect the IFAC rule book just as much as I respect the fives contact rule book, because I think in both situations, it's very black and white. Whereas with some of the other formats, as far as non-contact goes and seven screen and things like that, there's a lot of gray areas that get created. Yeah. And we see what the letter of the law says. But sometimes, you know, as Lance brought up about kind of letting guys play a little bit and things like that. So there's gray areas there. But with IFAP, it's very black and white. No, if you see contact, bring your flag out.
it's not even no dispute. It's like, and everyone knows, the players know it. When they
yeah.
see it, and even the fans know it. When they see it, they make a sound and everything. It's a flag. There's nothing you can do about it, but it's like, hey, just learning the game and thing, learning how to play that, and it's so different. It's really for the offense and defense.
Yeah,
you just got to be in the best position possible. If you're not, you're gonna get a flag.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that it's just so much finesse to it, and really, ultimately, it takes away a lot of the yak that you see. You know, happen in normal flag football where, you know, with jumping and spinning and kind of putting a little bit of body into the defender and things like that. Literally, as a receiver, you catch that ball, and if there's a defender close to you, you're better off just stepping out of bounds so that you don't get an illegal contact.
That's true.
You know, so
I never looked at it as that, but you're absolutely right. Just step out of bounds.
Because, and, you know, you don't want that penalty, illegal contact. I think it is 10 yards, I think.
It's 10 yards.
10 yards, yep. I remember right, yep. So that's a big deal. You get a first down, and, you know, and then you want to get a few extra yards, and you just bump into that defender 10 yards back, bring it back, you know. So
yeah, it's only 50 yards, so two of those there. And that's a ball game. And you get four
exactly. down. Exactly. So, all right. So let's kind of move into the topics. I appreciate you sharing your experiences, Joe. Man. I think that international play is just exciting, and I hope that I hope that the opportunities happen more, and that, you know, as an official, you know, I know USA Flag has the Olympic division, and I love being able to officiate that in Vegas. It was a lot of fun, and I think the teams just bought into it. They understood it was non-contact, and they just played it true to that. And I just want us to continue to do that. I think it helps everybody involved get ready for the Olympics, whether we're going to be a part of it or not. I think we're all building each other up for it, you know? So I think it's exciting stuff.
That part.
There you go. So, all right, let's bring it into the topics. I just want to review real quick the five play cooldown. Joe, have you had a recent experience where you've used this five play cooldown to your you know, in your toolbox?
I have not used it. Me personally, I have not used the five play cooldown. It has not taken effect of play whenever I've been referenced. It's been times where the player we give the personal foul or, you know, legal contact or things like that, but it hasn't been to the point where I had to use the cooldown. I'm glad because of that. I know guys get, you know, a little bit happy and they get excited over plays and things of that nature, but I'm glad I have not had to use it because I want players to be able to play. I want them to be able to, you know, perform and things of that nature, but, you know, sometimes you have to, and I'm glad we have that enforced now, because sometimes you just get too excited and you need to take them five plays. And the five plays happen like that. It's just the fact that you need to take a time away for the game to realize that we are playing flag football. And we're not trying, and no one's trying to get hurt and things like that. We're trying to have a good game, clean game. And that's the main thing, to keep the game clean. And that's the main purpose of that five play cool off. Because we can't get high headed and can't get caught up in the game. Because most of these players are ex NFL players or ex football players. And it's not football. It is football, but it's not contact where you get the pads on football. And when you get in the stripes, they get in the main frame and coming downhill and things in that nature. Like, hey, but you got to understand that, hey, we don't have pads on. We're playing flag football. And you should have been going for the flag.
So, yeah. No, for sure. And I think that, I continue to hear Jacob talk about it before every tournament. Hey, this is something in your tool belt. It's a good thing to use. You know, Jacob always talks about how much he loves it. He thinks it's a great tool to use. And I continue to hear that. And I just didn't see for a while opportunities where it made sense. Sometimes I feel like, unnecessary roughness or a personal foul or unsportsmanlike just seemed more appropriate. I did have a situation come up in Santa Clarita. It was the women's fives contact. It was the championship, and it was early on in the game, and a receiver caught the pass. She had those couple steps to slow herself down, and she just ran a girl out of bounds. And and that was a situation because, of course, that defender then popped up, and there was a lot of, back and forth. And I said to the receiver, I said, okay, you're taking the next five plays off. She was a little upset about the situation because she felt like the defender did respond after that. I said, but you initiated it. Take five plays off. You know, she cooled herself down, and I honestly felt like it worked out for the best. Now, I had another situation that same tournament. It was sixes contact. It was with the men's, and we were in the championship. And going into halftime, we had a situation where the quarterback, this team was down. The quarterback threw, one of the first plays of the drive, threw a pick six. And as the DB was about to get into the end zone, from my angle, I thought he did make somewhat of an attempt at the flag, but he definitely cleared through the guy. I threw a personal foul. They got their touchdown. They got, half the yardage on the PAT. And then basically it was halftime. After that, I felt like maybe things were going to cool down. Two plays into the game or into the second half, there was another cheap hit or something like that. I gave that player five plays off. Okay. Then the next play is a pick six. That same quarterback throws a pick six. And naturally, the linemen, they know what to do. They're going to clear these guys out, and they're going to clear this quarterback out who had just made a hit on one of their teammates.
Yeah,
they pushed him deep into the end zone, and then he threw a punch. Bench is cleared. Game over. Double forfeit in the championship, and that was that. I know New Dynasty, they like to put an asterisk next to that one because they were up by like two touchdowns by that point. But it was a double forfeit. Unfortunately, that's how that championship ended. Looking back at it, I do feel like maybe in that situation, if I had, had a better angle to see, because I saw the slow motion afterwards, it was definitely a forearm to the dude's shoulder. Not an attempt on the flag. And so if I had seen it from a better angle, maybe that quarterback either would have been tossed or the five plays. And maybe that would have prevented the next thing, things that happened. It's one of those domino effects, something for us to learn about, learn from and move forward. So I do think it's an effective tool when used. But I know Jacob always talks about how one or two things is going to happen. Either the player is going to cool down, his team's going to cool him down, and that five plays is going to help, or that player is then just going to lose it, and he's going to get tossed from the game. So,
that's true.
So I think it's a good way to kind of try to get the game back on track in that. So, now, Joe.
I only can say this because I don't live through experience like this when I first started playing flag. A time before where we was beating a team that was known as being some of the best team out there. I ain't gonna throw no names out there, I don't pass that, but they was looked at to being the number one team, and they was losing against a team that we was like in C division. but we had a stacked team, and we had them beat by like maybe 10 points in under two, and we had just got a pick, and the quarterback told his players to start a fight with us to forfeit to end the game, so we didn't technically win the game. And so I when you miss it, I'm like, whoa, that kind of hit hard, because I can see teams like, hey, we didn't lose. We technically didn't lose. As we was being the number one team or looked as being the best, we technically didn't go down as no loss.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, it's certain thing that's going to get people to the point where they feel like they have to tolerate. You know, it ain't they forget a penalty, whatever. You put your hands around my neck. You hit me. You know, it's certain things as a man. You're not going to be able to, it's nothing. Forget a tournament, forget this. No one's not going to respect the fact that you put your hands on me and think a penalty is going to save you. No, I'm sorry. I'm going to put my hands back on you. And I think when it got to that point where you knew someone was going to retaliate if you put your hands on them in a manner. So, in saying that, I think some teams can't take the fact of losing in certain teams and getting beat. And they say, forget it, you know, and jump to that conclusion. But yeah, whenever you said that, it hit it, Connor, because I like when I first jumped in the flag, that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, and for sure. Like, wow. Well, and I think there's a trend that's happening now. The bigger the flag football, the bigger these events get, I am noticing more and more that the parks that are providing, you know, the space for these tournaments to happen, they are bringing in security. They are making sure that local law enforcement is aware of it. And my understanding in San Antonio, if those sheriffs were very much present, and so that's why fights didn't happen, is because even if there was a little pushing going on, then those sheriffs were over by that field and they weren't leaving, and they were keeping their eye on that game the rest of the time, and they were keeping their eye on those players the rest of the weekend. And so I think that's a good thing. I think ultimately we need to be very protective of the players, the fans, the spectators, the youth that are continuing to grow in this sport and see the role models of this sport. I think making it a safe place for everybody is very important. So I think the bigger these events get, having that extra layer of security, because ultimately Jacob and Chun can only do so much, you know. Exactly. And and they shouldn't have to step in front of, you know, two guys that are trying to fight. You know, there are security guards.
And it's a team.
Yeah.
Everybody, like, you know, when you try to break up a fight, I'm not so big. Like, someone else is going to get hit. And it's not the person that's supposed to get hit. And that's not fair to nobody. You know, run a tournament and actually, you know, we get hit by someone. No.
Yeah. And I love the, and I'm so low on the totem pole, man. So I can't talk about logistics. I'm sure sometimes I think of some crazy ideas that logistically don't make any sense at all. But in Tampa, I like the concept of having the championship games in a wrapped field, where literally the only people that can be on that field and on the sideline is the players and the officials. And that's it.
Yeah.
Now, everybody else in that box. I understand ultimately if somebody wants to fight, they're going to fight. And then if someone wants to run from and jump over the barrier, they're going to go ahead and do that. But I just feel like it gives a little bit of a bubble, a little bit of space, where then it really comes down to just the players and the officials, and the game just gets played. So, you know, again, I don't know the logistics of it, but maybe at other tournaments, if there could be a championship field that would just be separated by that, it only gets used for the championship. The grass or turf gets protected a little bit more, and it makes the championship feel a little bit cooler in that, a little bit more energy. So, but maybe provides a little bit more safety. I do know that there are teams. Yeah, go ahead.
I feel like they could even put the time in a scoreboard up there too, so the refs don't have to worry about the championship game. Let the ref focus on the champ, like, you know, so they can see the time. They can see after the time is, and they can see the score. We're focusing on the game alone. Ain't nobody gonna ask you what time it is, how much time it is right here, what the score is. Your focus is on this game. In the championship games, Let the refs focus just on the game and take that out of the air so you won't be. Because sometimes you can ask the ref what the time is. You ask the ref what the time is, the play just, somebody says snap.
Yeah.
I didn't see the false start. Ref, you see the false start? No, I just said the time.
Yeah.
So in saying that, that takes away a lot of element from the game to get them the best possible game possible.
I mean, the reality of it is if we're in a stop clock situation, we got the stop clock right here, so we got to press start or stop. We're counting out our play clock. We got, you know, we always got somebody in our ear, right, asking us what down it is, what score it is, all this stuff. I will say probably where false starts get missed the most is in those critical situations. Because there's so much that we're keeping track of. And you know, I know I've brought it up before that us as officials cannot be compared to NFL officials. That is, Joe, that's a perfect example because they have a 9-person crew. There's a big scoreboard. They are not keeping track of as much as we are when we have a 2-person crew. You know, yeah, so
I just like I said, it makes the game a whole lot easier. And I know the man can't do it for every game, but the championship game, let us give them the best game possible, so you can help us. That we help you as you help us as well.
Yeah,
It clears up a lot of gray areas. Like we were talking about, it's no gray areas when it comes down to that. No one, as already, just players and coaches on the field, and they're not gonna say nothing to us because the only thing they're gonna see is they're gonna see the play block, the play clock, the game clock, the timeouts, and the score on the board. And it's nothing you can say to officials to let us do our job.
Yeah, I mean, again, not speaking on logistics, maybe this is crazy for me to even suggest, but if it's you and me, Joe, for a championship game, and we have the opportunity to have a third, but that third could be kind of in a booth, you know, away from the field, and they're keeping track of downs, of the clock, they're keeping track of the score, I think you and me could handle, we can handle everything else.
Like, with no problem being what we need to be, all mechanics and everything, it's nothing you're going to say to me now. It's nothing you can say to me.
Yeah.
Like, nothing that you're going to say to me about anything, because everything is given to you already. And since it's given, only thing we're doing is doing our job and making sure we give them the best reference possibility that we can happen, you know, without being distracted from the game, you know. So
we're watching the game. And then also what happens in other situations, if there's an unsportsmanlike, they're able to track it, which player it is. If there's a 5-play cooldown, they're able to track it. Now I'm sure that Jacob and Lance are going to be so upset that you and me are talking about this. But, hey, you know they're not on the show this week, so I guess we're going to have the conversation, right?
There's some thoughts in the air out there, you know.
Yeah, you know what I mean? So, it's cool to think about. I'm sure that there's things that we're doing as officials that 10 years ago, you know, they were cooking up in their, you know, in their head. And as we talked about earlier, the evolution of the game and how things are going, and it's exciting. So who knows? Maybe that'll come down the pipeline eventually as well. So I just want to keep it moving. You know, Joe, you and me never played against each other. I don't know why our paths never crossed. But from my understanding, you were a rusher, right? You played on the D-line?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So did you just play contact or did you play non-contact as well?
I played them all. I think contact was my biggest thing. But I did play. We won a couple championships in non-contact in the B division. And national non-contact. I won four-man before, four-man B. But I never won a four-man or a five non-contact A. But I did win B championship. So, but it's different. It's totally different. It's a lot of running. You know, of running out. And me personally, all that I did was rush. I focused on my skill level, just rushing. That's all I did in either format. But it's a lot of more rushing when you're doing non-contact. You're running from that 7 yards, and you got a quarterback who lined up 10 yards behind the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
That's 17 yards, plus his drop back once he gets the ball. Oh, man. Oh, man. That's a lot of money. And don't let them have a double quarterback and you happen to get ping pong.
Yeah, oh yeah. Yep.
I'm no, and that, game, bro.
Yeah, and I did both as well, non contact and contact, but I was a rusher. D line was the place I loved to be. That was my focus. Ever so often I would get pulled, especially in eights. I would get pulled onto the O-line just because I could be, you know, kind of a presence on the O-line. I can't necessarily say I knew how to do the, what is that, kick step or anything like that. if I needed to, I could play center. I knew how to snap the ball, but I do feel like there's always somebody that's a better center. And so... So I wanted to speak to the D line.
I just played my role. That was it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so I just want to talk about the rush. I think it's perfect. You and me are the ones talking about this. We can talk about both as a player, as an official. So speaking of non-contact, the most important call, I think this gets brought up at the start of every tournament that we go to, is the call that everyone's going to be looking for. The call that everyone's complaining about, probably because 90% of the players don't even understand what this rule is. It's impeding the rush, you know, and more times than not, the first thing when you throw that flag, immediately a player, what is the player's first response when you bring up impeding the rush?
I didn't touch him.
He didn't touch him. And it's so easy. I'm glad you said that because that's exactly what it is. That's exactly what the first thing the receiver or the center is going to say is, I didn't touch him. So before we get too deep into this, I think we got another guest. Let me see who it is. Uh-oh. Oh, it's petty time. Here we go.
Oh,
what up, Pat?
I ain't got my headphones, so I might be echoing.
Oh, man, come on. You always bring – now you got a fan in the background.
Hey, you know I'm a noise maker.
Yes, sir. Hey, so we just talking about – we just got into it. We talking about the rush, impeding the rush. So, Pat, just to bring you into this, what do you look for in impeding the rush? How do you differentiate between is it causing a rush to hesitate? Did they move on their own? What are your mechanics to catching that?
I look for anything that alters the rusher as far as either speed going in or moving going left to right. I don't care if they make contact or not. If I see that rusher, if I watch tendencies. So if this rusher is a blazer taking off every time from 7 yards, I'm going to watch the tendencies of how they speed change. But, I mean, you can have some rushers that will walk and then rush to run to the line. And it's kind of difficult on that end. But I just – pay attention to the direction and the speed that rusher is going every time. And if they're paying attention to, or if they're walking and waiting until everything open up, you know, every rusher is different.
Different.
Yeah, mm-hmm. For sure. Joe, anything you want to add to that?
I was about to say, just piggyback on Pat, like most of the rushers, like either you got a rusher that's going to gun blaze straight to the quarterback, or some of them, like they say, they wait till the play open up, because now when it opens up, I feel like them the ones that don't want no smoke. They don't want to contact with nobody, get a penalty in them, because they, if you have the right of way, they have tension, but why do you wait to open up? If they in your way, you hit them, man. Or you go a different route, that's a flag every time. So then when I see people walk and then wait to open up, yeah, you got a clear path, and then you can see more things, but most times you can get that call whenever I feel like that's the advantage of the offense, man. If you walk in and wait till it open up, because now you allow me to do my route 3 to 4 yards within, 5 yards within, and it's no problem. But if you go straight like I used to go, somebody's going to run into me or I have to alter my path because I'm coming straight toward you. You know, as simple as that.
So, Joe, for you, you would go straight up the middle, or you came from an angle? What was your strategy?
Most time, I depend on what quarterback is, a right-handed or left-handed. I try to pay attention to that one at first. If I see them right hand or left hand, I come from a different angle off that bunch. I try to see that weak side, you know, the side that he doesn't like to go to that much, things in the nature. And my DBs help me out with that. So when I play, they will let me know he don't have to go this way. Come this way. Come this way. And I have players that help me out with that with like, hey, or they know the quarterback. Come from this angle and you're going to get him. He's not going to throw to this side and stuff like that. So that's my determination. But I come up the middle. If they're not touching, all I like to make, if I don't see them touching, I make it an issue to come up the middle. Because I feel like I'm going to get there before their route break. And I'm going to have to alter my route. I'm going to go through it. It's going to be a penalty. And they're going to have to fix it. And then next play, they, you know what, end up touching each other because they know I'm coming. Now I got to come to an eight. Now I got to go to the side. So if I don't see you touching, I'm going to get a penalty. I'm going to get the flag by going straight up the middle and hit somebody. You know, even if I fall or whatever, but I'm coming.
Yeah. So, Pat, just how do you differentiate between when it's an impeding and when that rusher is trying to initiate that contact and it should actually be an illegal contact on the rusher? How do you differentiate the difference?
I watch for the dip in the shoulder. If you waiting on impact and you slow down, I know you waiting for that receiver. As far as if you slow down and you've been rushing hard the whole time, I know you waiting for that receiver so you can try and get a impeding the rusher. But if now you're rushing full speed and I see you leave your path and you dip your shoulder, that means you're trying to cause the contact. Because if you keep running normal, you won't cause no impeding the rusher or illegal contact. But if I see you brace up for the impact, I already know.
Yeah, I think it's a dip of the shoulder or that unnecessary chicken wing. You know? You know, so all right, cool. Well, you know, we talked a little non-contact, but let's have some fun now. Let's bring it into contact. Now, I know for myself, I wanted the challenge. I was in the gym all the time. When I was playing contact, I wanted to hit somebody. And so I would look for the biggest dude on the O-line. And I wanted to line up against him, and I wanted to just jam, you know, push him right into the quarterback, and just easily just you know, take a little whip at the triple threats, and know that they would just come off. So, Joe, what was your strategy as a contact rusher?
Oh man, as a contact rusher, you know, the speed. I use my speed as him. Where you know, I'm a little bit stronger, and I stand on my own 10 as a rusher, but you know, I'm not able to probably push you back to the quarterback. So my biggest thing was to try to either I'm gonna take you out of the play where you're not gonna, I got you, you got me, or I'm gonna try to use my speed and try to make you cross your feet a little bit, you know, one of those type of things. But I wasn't finna sit there and try to fight with you.
I feel like you and me would have been good on the line together because I could open up a gap for you to shoot through. And that is probably what would have happened.
I rushed with some of the biggest guys. Jordan, I rushed with Rodney, where it was like they was the big guy. I might come right underneath them. They got two people sometime, and I'm like, whoop, boom, and I go right, and I'm so quick where the quarterback looking at it, nope, and I come underneath, and by the time then, he's loose. He don't throw him off for him, or they don't throw him off for him. So it's like it's a perfect mix, blend. Whenever you got a fast rusher and you got a strong rusher, so it's like, hey, the strong guy go clean it up, and I love it, you know. Until they be like, they put two big guys in the backfield. They're like, man, really? But when they do that, and they got a center, that's four people right there. So you know they got one receiver now. Now I feel like I'm being an impact player because now they got to put somebody down there to slow that down. That's taking away from their receiving core. So now we have somebody come down in the box sometime.
There you go. Hey, so Pat, what are you looking for if you're the official on the line of scrimmage, five contact, six contact? What are you looking for as far as what is acceptable, not acceptable for a rusher going in contact?
I would say my biggest thing is making sure, first off, letting the center get his head up, him or her get her head up. That's first. Second is watching all the hands to the face. Some rushers I know they notice they like to grab the offensive player and grab and pull it's a good new technique that's been I've been seeing used. But that'd be the biggest things as far as my two when it comes down to what I'm watching on that line. As far as making sure, I mean, that ain't my responsibility unless I'm on the line, you know, making sure they're not leaning over the ball. But yeah, those are the two biggest. Making sure that center gets his head up and making sure as far as the hands to the face. That's the biggest thing in the trenches. Because Joe will tell you, I mean, short rushers can catch a hand to the face and now they pissed off. And now they want to jump and hit somebody in the face and get past them. So that's the big three. Because it's going to be a reaction to every action.
Joey, anything you want to add to that?
Just like same thing, piggyback on Pat again. Make the hand to the face is big. As far as on the line, a lot of times just the hands to the face and the false starts and over there. And the biggest thing, like they don't realize, but not encroachment, but when they put their head in the neutral zone, they lean up and their head go in the neutral zone. It's like, man, I was behind the ball. You was behind the ball, but when you lean forward, you're past the ball. So that's the flag, but. That's the biggest thing with the L and N. Everything is fine.
Gotcha. So just Joe, just cover roughing the passer for me. What if you're the white hat behind the quarterback? What are you looking for to decide if it's a good rush and he was making an attempt at the flag, or if it crossed the line and became roughing the passer?
I like when you said attempt to the flag, because a lot of times they hit that quarterback's arm. And they say, you wasn't going for the flag. So you should be going for the flag. So there's no reason for you to be hitting their arm. Now, if you're going to jump to try to bat the ball, your hand need to be going straight up in the air to bat the ball. But when you're coming down across their arm and they hit their arm, it's no way. So, that rough in the past, a lot of time when their arm get hit, or when they lower that shoulder into them to try to pull the flag. Now, I was good about when I rushed was when I'm shorter. So when I came through, my whole body and torso was coming through your shoulders anyway, because that's where I am. So a lot of time that was a clean play. But when you got these bigger rushers and they're bigger and they come in with their shoulders are hitting them in the neck area. That's rough in the past. And their arms are by their, but their arms are still by their waist. They were like, I went for the flag, ref. I get that. But your shoulders is coming in. Boom. So that's roughing the passer. I said, I was good with it because I was short. And when I short and I go down, I'm already down. My shoulders are not hitting you in the shoulder area. I'm hitting you in your waist area. And that's why the quarterbacks didn't like me. But I didn't hit you up high. I can't never hit you up high unless I leave my feet. So make it make sense to me when I rush the quarterback, they didn't stand it, but I can never hit you up high if I'm coming down low at your waist every time with my shoulder.
Yeah, for sure. Pat, anything you want to add on that? Roughing the passer?
Say again. Say that one more time.
Anything you want to add about roughing the passer?
Roughing the passer. Ooh. That's a rough. Because being a guy that's been in the trenches as a safety coming down the line, and rushing into the quarterback, I was the guy that Joe was talking about. I'm gonna put that shoulder into your sternum. But I'm also gonna grab that flag, especially if it's pops. Now, if it comes down to a heavier quarterback, and them heavy quarterbacks that like to put the triple threats on their belly button, those are the guys that you have to let the referee know in advance. Hey. This QB got his flag on his triple threat on his belt buckle. I mean, on this
punch his ass.
So, so if I catch him with a little body, that's the only way I can really pull this flag because you're going to hit me. But when it comes down to roughing the pass, like Joe said, that's the biggest thing I watch for, the quarterback leaning back. Because sometimes they try and flop and get a flag pull, as far as a roughing the passer. They're on their back foot, falling back, trying to avoid any contact, and I see that all the time. And if I, well, why ain't getting no flag? I'm looking at you, falling back as you throw the ball. I mean, no.
Yeah, hey. Hey, shout out to Ant from New Dynasty that literally will jump in the air, going out of bounds, and still look up for a roughing the passer. You know?
Jumping, leaning back, and I'm looking at you like, are you lost your mind? Like,
yeah.
I mean, I've even seen a quarterback dip and sit in the pocket. Dip, yeah. And then the rusher goes for the flag, and he dip now. Cram. Yeah, that's that. Now you in Joseph's vicinity. Like, is it a rope in the passer? Boom. I mean, dipping ain't giving up your body, but I mean, you just lowered your whole torso.
Yeah.
And that rusher was going for the flag, so it's like,
welcome to my
tough,
man.
Yeah, especially in my later years. Once my motor started going, I was going. And so if that quarterback decided to dip or something like that, yeah, that's their mistake on that one. So I have so much fun when I get the opportunity, especially in contact, to be on the line of scrimmage. Especially when guys are just there to play and they're having fun and they're not trying to call each other out of their name and take things personal and cheap shot each other. When it just comes down to it, and the trenches are just, they're just going at each other. It's good competition. So I think that contact can live in that world where there's not a lot of flags, there's not a lot of whining, and it's just good contact flag football. And I think that, it definitely, the game overall benefits when the trenches are good like that. So
yeah.
any other thoughts, Pat, on as far as rushing or anything?
I would say one thing when it comes to a lot of these rushers, they don't have the right mechanics either. I mean, they talk about referees not having the mechanics. I mean, they don't know how to use the stab. They don't know how to use the rip. I mean, they don't know how to fight with their hands. All they think they can do is run and grab. I mean,
yeah.
that's the three techniques of rushing. Yeah, you can't just bull rush anybody. You got to know how to stab. As far as keep that blocking back, you know, with one hand so you contain the outside. You have to also know, I mean, spin move. You ain't Dwight Freeney. You ain't this flag football. I mean, it's just a lot of them, they give up their back. They'll spin and get caught with their back on the blocking back and ask them, hey, it's blocking in the back. No, you spent that direction, and he gave you an extra push because you spent. I mean, now if you ran by him and he gave you an extra push, that's a blocking in the back, you know. But when you spin and he has his hand or she has her hand on you and they give you that extra toss, hey, the hand never detached from you. Bye-bye. Yeah. So just the rushers have to learn the techniques and go back to it.
Yeah. Yeah, I just remember every time I came home from a long weekend of playing football or whatever, my, you know, all here would be all bruised up. Yeah. I would have, you know, marks and all of that, and that just made me want to get better, because clearly those O-line were able to get a hold of me and keep me at bay. So I wanted to get faster and stronger, you know.
Yeah, Pat was good for doing that with me. Pat, I don't know. Pat had my number when it came to rushing against Pat, so he just knew exactly what to do when it came to me. So I had to switch up. Y'all got Pat on this side. I'm going that side. Like, he knew how to get me right underneath, and I'm trying to swaddle out of his ass. And
I used to tell Joe once he retired, I said, Joe, the reason why I was able to get you, you always been on the pump fake. You was reaching when I got ready. You thought my hands were gonna come out, and you can hit my hands down. I reach like I'm about to hit you. And you give me your move, and you give me that chicken wing. Now I'm about to give you a good.
Yeah, both my arms and stuff, man. I'm like, man, go ahead, pack it off me.
Oh man! All right, Hey, Pat, me and Joe talked about it earlier, but did you happen to see the selection for the teams of the national team, both men's and women's today? Did you check it out at all?
I mean, I did see all those gang members. I mean, God, dog. One thing I can say, though, they dropped the gangs. I mean, they threw up the gangs, but they got rid of the beef because they playing amongst each other.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, it's the first time you ever seen nothing but gangsters playing on the same team. I don't know how they're gonna do when they get back to their city. But
yeah.
When somebody in that picture throwing up another rival gang sign and then the picture with them, I don't know how that's gonna play out. But I mean, it is what it is, man. But yeah, I saw it, man. It's actually a nice team if you take away, like I said, the pose and the signals that they threw up in the photo.
For sure.
I mean, that was a good point takeaway from the whole picture, but got some dogs out there, honestly, and it's good to see some of the old ones that's still on the team, and it's great to see some of the new ones that's going to probably make some impacts too. That should have been on the first one, but, you know, it's all about I ain't going to say politics at that time, but
sounds like you just said politics.
I mean, politics is politics at the beginning. I mean, but, I mean, they held it down no matter if it was politics or not at the beginning. Now we got to see, hopefully this don't be like after the Dream Team and then we get to the Fail Team and then now we got to bring back the Dream Team, Redeem Team.
Yeah.
So, but no, I mean, I think it's a pretty nice squad. I see these guys all the time. Just hopefully they don't bring all these rules and all that crap back over when they come back the USA flag for Worlds or Nationals, thinking nobody can't breathe on them or touch them because they hey, this ain't what that is. IFAF.
IFAF. Yeah.
This ain't IFAF. I mean, hey, this is the big boys, USA flag.
Hey, man, I mean, I know that the national team isn't completely comprised from guys from YTG, but there are a few players on there, and I got to bring it up again, man. All the times that in my head, I looked at YTG as a team that was very physical, and they brought a lot of intensity, and I always thought to myself, how would they do in contact? Would they be able to handle their own? Would they be able to compete? And, man, they're going on two big tournaments now where they won fives contact. And so, I don't know, man. I just feel like things are shifting a little bit.
Hey,
they're on a YTG tour.
Like I say, I mean, as an official, I can't really speak on too much because, you know, it'd be kind of like, you know, they would love to hit, you know, they love to use that. Oh, he's from the East Coast. So he played with this team. No, yeah. So I don't even want to speak on it. But like I told y'all last time, it's strategy ball. And their strategy is very tough right now. Too many people can match up with their offense. I mean, defense ain't great. I mean, straight up, defense is not that great. If my sorry team can put up 18 points to get them, and, I mean, their offense is what needs to be stopped. All it takes is one pick six or two turnovers to go down, and then that's when we'll find out what they really can do. Like, I mean, I want to see what they can do if they go down and no homo against Bex. Because once you go down against Chad, it's hell to come away from that. I've never seen a team go down, touchdown, and Chad get the ball at halftime, and you win. No.
Yeah,
not even at Nash, not even at Worlds this year that happened. Free Smoke got the ball at halftime. That's how they kept it going.
Yeah.
So, but really, the only opportunity for that to happen will be in Tampa. Is that right? Or
yeah, I mean, I doubt Chad coming to Nashville. I don't think so. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, we'll find out and see when we see him at the draft tournament. I'll ask him in person.
Yeah. Yeah. So okay. Well, yeah. It'll be fun. I'm gonna be a little rusty since. East Coast Nationals was my last tournament, and you know, I got a lot going on right now in my life, so I haven't been able to do a lot of officiating, but I'm excited for Nashville. That'll be a lot of fun, 3-day tournament, and I guess I get to see Petty Pat one more time, lace him up, and
I didn't make a choice, but I talked to the missus, and that's not gonna happen. So, it was more of a professional transition move. get my ego out of it. Take my ego out of it. I mean, that'd be a donation to that organization as far as to a young man that may need to play on that team. But yeah, the cleats are hung up permanently, and I'm not gonna make a Facebook post about it. I'm not gonna tell anybody about it. I told Jacob already. But yeah, the cleats are done for real. Like no joking around. Done.
Nah, I feel you. Okay, cool. Yeah, hey, I mean, everybody's time comes, as they say, Father Time is undefeated. So,
this wife time.
Hey, Joe, see how quick I was able to get that ego back up there?
Hey, the ego always going to be there, but the ego don't.
Oh man! All right, Joe. You have any final thoughts to add about anything flag football life? Anything you got going on?
We got the draft tournament going on the 29th, and we have that other tournament. Pat, you still doing that tournament?
Body armor tournament. I hit you up with all the details, and that's how it goes.
Okay. Because I know I'll be doing the kids that morning with the body armor with the kids that are going down here. But after I get done with them, I'm all towards whatever you got, everything hip out with your area.
Yeah, hey, I might have to slide through that area being enough teams, you know what I'm saying? With the kids.
Hey, need to say no more. I'm gonna let my guy know now and you'll be a part of that. Don't even worry about that.
Yeah.
There you go. Pat, anything you wanna speak on?
We got as far as I got the 8 women's playoffs this Sunday. We'll see who wins that as far as the 8 women's contact. There were some good games this past weekend. And then what Joe said, we have the body armor tournament. I think it's on the 22nd and 23rd. And then we have the draft tournament. And 29. Then, it's going to get time for Nashville.
Yeah, there we go. And Pat, I know you brought it up. I could speak on it as well. I've lived a life. I did a lot of dumb stuff as a teenager, as a young man in my 20s, and I experienced a lot of stuff that I don't wish on anybody. As far as the men's national team and that picture. I don't know if any of them listen to the podcast, but if they do, I'm just asking you guys to remember you all are role models. Let's not continue. I know my generation growing up, I had the role models of Tupac and Biggie and a lot of movies around that kind of culture and that lifestyle. So growing up, I saw a lot of bad examples of what life could look like and glorifying a gang culture. And it made me think that lifestyle was something I wanted to portray and I wanted to be a part of. And it caused me a lot of issues in my life and continues to cause me issues in my life. And so I hope that people that are representing this country, flag football players that are professionals or wanting to be professionals, that they just take those signs down. If you want to have the peace, go ahead and have a piece, you know what I mean? But outside of that, let's keep the signs down. Let's keep the hands down. Let's be willing to spread love more than hate and violence and the things that continue to incarcerate the youth, because we want the next generation to put all that stuff behind us and not continue to have that stuff be a part of this world. So that's my piece on it. I don't know if either one of you guys want to add anything about that, but feel free.
Well, I say me, I've never been gang affiliated besides the Army. That's the biggest gang that I've ever been a part of. But as far as, like I said, man, I've seen people lose their lives, even joining the military, thinking it was that mentality of gang banging or whatever. And they get out and go home and things happen to them. So, I mean, this flag football is only going to be temporary for some of those guys. When they go over to the location to play and all that, get home, you still got to face those people that's gonna be watching. Better to not be known than to be known. I mean, everybody know who you are. You don't have to show the world. I mean, now everybody sees it. That's on social media. I mean, if I was
them on social media, I mean, I would ask them to remove it if they could, especially USA Football. I would ask them to remove it and put a different photo up there of them without that.
Yeah, I'm sure they could. Oh, go ahead, Joe.
I'm sorry about that. I'm the same way, man. I've never been affiliated with games and things like that going up, you know, staying down the right path, showing a better zephyr for the youth and things in that nature to see, you know, it's always one thing you get the opportunity to get chosen. And because you do take advantage of those opportunities in life, because sometimes some people want those opportunities and will never will be able to get those opportunities. So be appreciative of the opportunity that you do have and the fact that you are representing the country. And there's a time and place for everything. And that time and place for that right there was not appropriate to be doing that. So I do agree with you guys in that nature. And hopefully they, you know, it gets to them and they do take that picture down, or, you know, it won't be none of that. Cause, you know, people, like I said, people make mistakes in life. But it's what you do at the mistake that makes it better. So hopefully that could be able to be a learning experience, like you said, with Ant, just having a learning experience and hearing from some OGs to let you know that, hey, you know, cool is not that cool. You know what I mean? You don't have to do all that past that. You don't got to do all that to be known. You know what I mean? It's best if we know who you are, and we appreciate you for representing our country and things in that nation. But hey, in the same time, understand what you're doing it for and who you're doing it for and who's all looking up for to you as what you do.
And I got one. Can you imagine if my whole platoon, when I was in the army, before we get ready to pull through up gang time? That's all I can tell you. Yeah, I mean, I can't fall, but can you imagine if everybody in the army threw up gang signs, some people put on masks, people put on, you know, you won't go on this. And we took a picture. Mm-hmm. That's the way to represent the U.S.? Nah.
All the perception, what they're going to have for you is that.
Exactly. Yeah. Hey, and that's, you know, that's why I think, you know, not to put words in Chun's mouth or anything like that, but Chun did make a statement when one of the last times he was on this show, that he said the future of flag football is the women and the youth sport. And unfortunately, I would say that if men continue to carry themselves like this, or they continue to just want to be disrespectful or carry them a certain way, they're going to continue to lose their kind of hold on this sport. You know, if you look at the women and the youth, none of them are throwing gang signs up in their pictures. They are representing the United States. They're representing the game that they play, and they're carrying themselves in that way. And so, you know, I think that goes to say that if men are okay just giving up flag football to the women and the youth and let them run with it, and that's ultimately what becomes the larger population of this sport, by all means, you know. But yeah. I also think that as a man that is almost 40 years old, I got a little gray in my beard, and I can speak on stuff for the younger generation, you know what I mean? And I just know that I want my children to grow up in a different world. And I want things to look different. And so let's get away from how flag football used to be, that there's so much of a party scene and so much of all of this just negativity surrounded by it. Let's bring it up. Let's lift people up. Let's do what sports can do for somebody that doesn't have the advantages that others do in life, which can bring them out of that negativity and provide them with the opportunity to be an Olympian. That's an amazing opportunity. You know, so
and it's gonna be, and I pray that in the next next 4 years or 3 years, that picture some kind of way disappear. Because if you're looking at it as far as the VP, what if the VP of the NFL was actually looking at that photo and thought about having the NFL versus the USA flag team as far as against them in the Pro Bowl or whatever? That just turned. That turned me off. I'm the VP. Like, I'm good. I'd rather us play against the ladies, you know.
Showcase
that, you know. So, I mean, it's just a lot that I don't think they put too much thought into it. I think about it was a cool idea when they did it, but didn't think about it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, and I know ultimately we can all speculate about what, you know, what impact NFL players will have on the final Olympic team and all of that. But you know, the NFL brand in itself, that is, they protect that shield, they protect that brand NFL players can't even go without wearing socks or they're going to get fined. So there's a lot of things that NFL players, they have a standard that is set for them as a professional athlete that they have to uphold. And so if they have the opportunity to go into the Olympics, it's going to be a lot easier for them to transition into it compared to maybe somebody that is not having that same standard. So I think just everybody just needs to continue. You know, I make a joke of it every day, right, where I'm sending you guys pictures of officials all over the country that can't even tuck their shirt in. You know, I think everybody needs to just take it up a notch. As flag football grows and as we get closer to the Olympics, we all need to hold ourselves to a new standard. You know, no judgment on anybody, not trying to throw shade or anything like that, but I want all of us to just continue to elevate.
Yeah. So, I'm going to tell you, I can say the players that's in everybody that we're talking about in that picture, reffing them this weekend, they were some of the respectfulest guys, so I don't see why that even happened or that picture was put there. It was other pictures than me taking pictures. They could have put other pictures there. So the way they conducted themselves at UNC Charlotte, hands down. So I don't see why they would put that. See what I mean? They did what they like. It was very respectful, you know, through the organization, through the building, when they played, to the refs and everything. It was no problem at all. So, but when you see that picture, you see something different. And what we live in a lifetime now of, what you put out there is what they perceive you as. So, saying that, you know what I mean, you don't want that to be perceived as wrong because that's not who they were this weekend. They really played hard. They really did what they had to do. They really was out there doing exactly what they were supposed to do, hands down. So, I don't want that to get taken in. You know what I mean? Just because of that picture, because that's not who they are. That's not who you are. Like Pat said, you don't have to be just to be known. You know what I mean? You can be who you are. Like we said, like I always, you know, represent that. You don't have to do all the stuff that, you know, to be cool. Be yourself and be who you are. And that's just enough. For you to get selected to this, be this far is because you was being who you are around, away from around that setting or that environment that made you feel like you had to do that. But outside of that, they was well demanded, well, you know, played hard, you know, well respected this weekend. It just that one pitch can get taken out of context real fast.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, I think we talk about it all the time as far as like an unsportsmanlike penalty. It's all about taking it. You know, a lot of those penalties come from taking it outside of the lines. If it starts talking about stuff that is outside of football, let's keep it in the lines. You know what I mean? Just like you said, Joe, they played and they earned their right. They're the final 12. Essentially, they've been told that they're the best 12 players in the country to represent the United States in flag football, in Finland, in another country. There are so many people playing flag football that wish they had that opportunity, wish they had that chance. And they were, you know, they were picked to do this. So let's keep it with inside football. Let's keep it about football. Let's keep it about who's the quarterback, who's the wide receiver. Like, I would much rather have us having the conversations because I don't know a lot of those guys, and so I don't know anything about them. Just like you said, it's the perception is what we're going to – perception is reality, right? And so I would much rather get to know them as football players and what they bring to try to bring home that gold to the United States and go from there, you know? So – I appreciate y'all having this conversation. I think, I think for all of us, hard conversations are important to have. I know last week I brought some stuff up, and I think it's something that, hey, we got a podcast, and whether or not people are listening or not, it gives us a platform to be able to share some thoughts and share our opinions on things. And ultimately, just like anybody else, just like football players, we make mistakes. We are officials, we're human, but that also means that we have feelings and emotions and we have opinions as well. And so this is our opportunity to kind of talk through that stuff and share our own experiences. And when we get onto that football field, it's all about football for us. It's all about respecting the game and trying to provide the best, safest, fairest arena for flag football. So So yeah, so I appreciate y'all. As far as this podcast goes, we are everywhere. We're on Spotify. We're on YouTube. Both of those will be posted tonight. We're on Instagram. We're on Facebook, TikTok. So we are all over the place. And this was our 20th episode. So I appreciate y'all being a part of this journey. I appreciate everyone that's listening. And just continue to like, subscribe, share, follow, so that you continue to know when the episodes are happening. I know that some guys will be in Tampa next weekend, and so we probably next week we'll be reviewing Tampa. Most of all, we're looking towards Nashville. I can't wait to see Joe. You're going to Nashville too, right?
Yes, I'll be there.
Okay, all right, cool. So I can't wait for all of us to be back in Nashville, and then hopefully we can do something fun as far as the show goes. So I appreciate y'all. Y'all have a good night.
All right, you too, my guy.
Got it.